Welcome back to the podcast, everyone. I'm here with Dr. Adilma Yearwood. She's the department chair of professional nursing practice at Georgetown University. And she's just given a keynote talk here at the MHNN conference. Adilma, how are you feeling after your talk?
I am excited to have done this, and I feel very good. I think the audience was very engaged, and I think that they did a lot of work during the presentation in thinking about ways to that they're going to move forward personally to understand this, these concepts, and also to take it with them. Yeah. So I feel very good about that.
Absolutely. I thought that was, it was really impressive in that sense. You kind of, you got us energized, you got us thinking after a late night last night for some
right.
people.
Right.
So, you were talking about stigma and mental health literacy in low and middle income countries particularly. Can you paint a picture for us of the impact that poor knowledge about mental health and the stigma that comes from that has on people and their lives?
Well, I think for me, one of the things that I'm struck with when I go to the clinical area in the hospital with my students is are the number of patients that we deal with every week that talk about how their mental health issues are affecting them and their relationships with other people. The issue of not having friends because of their symptoms, the issue of being made fun of in their communities, the issue of not being like other people or being with other people. It's heartbreaking when you hear those stories. So I really think that this is something that we have to tackle. We have to take mental illness, put it to the center of the table, deal with it. These are challenges that people have, and we need to be humane and treat people well, despite some of the discomfort that we might have with their behaviors. Yeah.
And I guess we've made some progress in high-income countries in terms of stigma reduction in recent years, although that's probably more focusing on you know, what you call common mental health conditions rather than some severe mental illness.
Right.
What do you think the situation is in the majority of low and middle income countries in terms of stigma?
Well, I think it's probably worse. I've traveled to some countries. I was born in Panama, and I've traveled to Panama. I've seen some of the clinics in Panama, but I've also gone to some of the clinics in Jamaica. And one of the things that is pretty clear in some countries is that people are afraid of people who have mental illness. And so they are isolated a lot of times. People are not connected with their communities, with people. You know, they're made fun of in the streets. And that's heartbreaking to see because, you know, they're human, fellow human beings, and they're challenged, they're having difficulty. They don't have a place to live, they may not have proper food. And rather than embracing them and trying to take care of them, they're shunned, I think, in some of these communities. And that's just not a proper way, I don't think, to treat fellow humans.
And what do you think about what we've done over the last decade or so in high-income countries to try and reduce stigma? Do you think that's worked?
I really do. I can talk from a U.S. perspective. I think we are getting better at being more open with these conversations. So I think it's bringing it out and talking about it. It's bringing it out and being more inclusive with people. I think we're paying better attention. I know on our campus, we talk with our students a lot about pay attention to your roommate, pay attention to the other students on your floor. If somebody's having some issues or you know, isolating themselves, feeling depressed or lonely or whatever, make that known and let us know as the faculty. We have a lot of services, resources on campus for students, so we do approach it very, very in a supportive way. This is we all have things that we're dealing with, and it's not a mark on you. It's about this is a challenging time, and how do we help you get through this time as best as we can.
Yeah. And I guess it's not just about saying, look, this is what we do in the US, this is what we do in the UK, let's export that to other places in the world and sort it out there as well.
It looks different.
What do we know about what works in terms of reducing stigma mm-hmm. across the world?
Well, what the literature does tell us is that it's about contact. It's not avoiding or isolating individuals who have a mental illness. It's about how do we embrace them? How do we develop a comfort level with perhaps some behaviors that may make us uncomfortable? And how do we show people just common respect and courtesy and caring? I think it goes back to just the basics. You know, I hear you, I see you, I care about you as a fellow human being. I'm here for you. I think those are the kinds of things that we have to focus on and do better with. Yeah.
And you cited lots of research.
Yeah.
There's kind of 7 or 8 slides. Where I was, oh, here's another systematic review.
Right, right.
And it was quite interesting that a lot of those reviews were fairly empty and there's fairly poor quality evidence. But
right.
I guess I'm interested in this relationship mm-hmm. between mental health literacy mm-hmm. and stigma reduction. Mm-hmm. Can you give us a sense of how those two are woven together?
So the issue with the mental health literacy, it's about what do you know? Right. So if we increase what you know about whatever the topic is, so in this case, it would be depression, let's say, or anxiety or big picture mental health. If we help you understand what that is, what's going on with the brain, what's going on with your emotions, what's going on with your stress level, you know, you have a better understanding of when you're having perhaps symptoms that are controllable or not controllable. Right. And then what do you do? What do you have control over doing to take care of yourself? And so if we tackle the mental health literacy, increasing what people know, because in some of these communities, people have very, very old, perhaps limited understanding of mental health issues and what causes a mental disorder, very limited. So they're not necessarily thinking about the biological, biomedical kinds of things that drive some of these disorders. They are very focused on it being perhaps something that's done to the person from external sources, or because the person is quote unquote a bad person or has done bad things, that's why they're having these symptoms. So there are cultural factors that we have to understand. But we have to bring in the biological science. We have to help people understand the science of mental illness. And so the combination of the two is going to be very important. You know, we have to respect the cultural perspective because that's not something we're going to fix, you know, at all. But we can maybe tone down those archaic cultural perspectives and have individuals understand that there's also something happening in your brain that you have no control over or little control over that's equally important to driving those symptoms. So it's the combination would be important.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was really struck when you were presenting the evidence that you were mm-hmm. talking about the kind of multidimensional aspects of intervention. So, you mm-hmm. know, it's about contact. It's mm-hmm. about education. It's not about one of these things. We
right.
have to do all of these things for it to
right.
be successful. And the idea about contact is really interesting, isn't it? Because, you know, mm-hmm. contact with somebody who's depressed or anxious or has a common mental health problem mm-hmm. is quite different to contact with somebody living on the streets mm-hmm. with addiction problems mm-hmm. and psychosis.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder what you thought about how we extend stigma reduction that we currently
mm-hmm.
have
mm-hmm.
so that it actually reaches the people that really need it most.
Mm-hmm. Well, I had a colleague who said to me, this was a couple of months ago, one of the things she does is she walks, when she's going from home to work, she walks past basically this little community of homeless people, but she makes it her business to walk past the same community of homeless people all the time. So she'll bring a sandwich or she'll smile or she'll just ask their names. That's contact. So they know she's there. They know that she keeps re-engaging. I think that's wonderful because she's not finding a different path to home or work. She's actually saying, I see you, I value you, I'm paying attention. And so I think that that's contact, you know. So whatever we can do in a small way or a big way is important.
Yeah. And we can all do that,
mm-hmm.
but why don't we? So what's the first step?
I think the first step is getting outside of your own self. you know, are you paying attention to others? I think so many of us are very self-absorbed. It's about us and it's about, you know, life goes smoothly if we only do this, you know, and sometimes we have to be uncomfortable. I think it's okay to be uncomfortable. You know, reach out and make yourself uncomfortable by extending yourself to people who might be different, who you might have some trepidation from being around, because you learn so much from them, but you also, I think, give them a lot if you take the time.
There's a lot of money in global mental health research at the moment. Mm-hmm. If you were given a multi-million pound global budget, mm-hmm. to tackle stigma, mm-hmm. in low and middle income countries, what questions would you try and answer? What methodologies would you use?
I think one of the people who we just had in the room, I think the real place you start is with the people. What is it that they want to know, right? So what are the questions that they have? Because I think if you engage the community from where the community is, you have a better chance of sustainability, because they will own it eventually and they will want to find ways to make sure it continues. So I think the researchers have to start from that place. I mean, we might have some thoughts in our head, but I think we have to put those thoughts aside and go into communities and just listen to what people want and start from what people want.